Are you recording now?
I'm recording. This is gonna sound weird.
Things are about to get weird. Just get to the murder.
Hello, happy Friday.
Yeah, happy Friday. I hope there's snow on the ground at my house.
I also hope that there's snow on the ground at my house. If you're living in North Carolina, or I guess just living on the East Coast in general, you know, we've been having a bit of odd weather in the past couple weeks. Well, last week we got a huge fake out where they told us North Carolinians that we were getting snow, which then immediately made us all rush out and get milk and bread, because as we know, then milk sandwiches are the only thing that will save us from the frozen devil ice that falls from the sky. But it sadly snowed for about 10 minutes and then just cold rain
now,
all day. But we're supposed to get some on Friday.
Now, if you lived in Western North Carolina, though, where my family lives, they actually did get a good bit of snow. It's still on the ground. There's still actually a good bit. My grandma has an old wives' tale that her mom used to tell her. She put it on Facebook. I think it's, if the snow sticks around for 3 days, that means it's going to snow again. So maybe it'll snow and we'll actually get some this weekend, because I want some.
I have heard that, but I think it's a little bit more, it's something like, if it sticks around for 3 days, that means more's coming, or it's a little bit more catchy than it's going to snow again. It's like,
now she just said,
or there's some more's going to join it or something like that.
Yeah. So, yeah, she got pictures out here. The deers are playing in the snow. You know, she live on a good little plot of land. So, I hope that we get some snow, because we didn't get any. We got ice. Tex was slippy sliding off the porch when he had to go out, because he didn't realize the porch was icy. yeah, that was about it.
You know, I myself was slipping and sliding in the parking lot of my apartment community, so I'm right there with you, Tex. I did, you know, I braved the weather, braved the icy roads like any good Southern person to go get Waffle House on Saturday morning.
A hero, a true hero. But this is not a podcast about the weather, even though that would just be a riveting podcast. This is a podcast called This Is Gonna Sound Weird.
Yes, and each week we tackle a topic about all things true crime, paranormal, and everything in between. What's our theme this week, Taylor?
Our theme is cults. And yes, we've done a cults theme before, but there's so many out there it deserved a second. And one day, maybe a third, you know? But we do have to come up with a catchier name than last time, because last time I think we just named the episode Cults.
That is probably exactly what we did. We're not very creative when it comes to titles.
It's hard.
But you know, we will, it is hard, because we still want you to know what the episode is about, but also it'd be kind of catchy, you know, because we could say something, we can make it really out of pocket, the title, and then you'd be like, I don't know if I want to listen to this, and then you might skip it, exactly. And that would be awful. Because we're talking about cults this week, and I find cults really interesting. That's why we'll continue to do episodes on cults, because they just be doing some wild shit, and I'm intrigued.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many to choose from in America and around the world. You know, it's just, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I picked one this week that's pretty topical, I feel like. I don't know about you.
Mine is fairly topical. I don't want to give anything away, but I was talking to somebody the other day at work. We were talking about like doomsday preppers and like what would we do if the world was ending. And I, you know, some people you might say, oh, I'm gonna run to Costco, or I'm gonna do this. I think if it was 100% the end times, like, I think I would join a cult. I think that would be my best chance of survival.
Oh, yeah.
Would be joining some sort of cult.
Yeah, because you have people to help you. And odds are they got a lot of different skills. I mean, if the world ends right now, we could start our own cult and y'all could come here, because I currently am sitting next to a massive bin filled with doomsday food items that we're not allowed to eat unless it's the end of the world. Also, Brandon do know how to skin animals and cook them. so we won't starve. And if I get good at my, you know, herbal stuff and learn herbs, then I think we might be okay. So if you come, you know, our other friends come, we could just create our own cult if we'd like.
Yeah, I'm trying to get into canning food. If I get into that, that could be my skill I bring to the table. You know, food isn't good if it's gone bad. Also, you know, you're really good at, she made me a little, I don't know, like some like little finger knitted blanket.
Mm-hmm.
So, and she'd be doing cross stitches. So okay, that's a skill. We're just basically going to be like the Oregon Trail.
Yeah. And I got a sewing machine so I can sew us some clothes. I sewed a pillowcase the other day for Halloween. Theme. It's a Halloween theme. It's got a, what is it, the Jack skeleton, whatever his name is, from Nightmare Before Christmas. Very cute.
Oh, that's cute.
I'm gonna put it out for Halloween when it comes around.
I'm excited about that.
Me too.
You should drop that on the Instagram, see if anybody wants to buy your product.
Alright, yeah, I can make pillowcases for y'all. I can. I'll do it. Tell me what size pillow you got, or if you want to pay me, I can get you a pillow and put, you know, the case on the pillow and send it. I'll create a small business.
Support her. A women-owned small business.
Mm-hmm.
But we're just going to shift gears away from Taylor being a girl boss and talk about some girl boss cults.
Mm-hmm.
So, this week, I will be doing my story on 12 Tribes Community. You ever heard of this?
Oh my gosh. Yes, that's what I'm doing mine on.
No, you're not.
Yeah, I am.
No, you're doing about that diet bitch.
Yeah, she's right. I really thought I'd get a, really thought I'd trick her. Y'all should have seen her face. Even though it kind of gave away what I'm doing mine on, it's worth it.
Because, okay, so many, many, many episodes ago, when we did our, what was it, Southern Crimes episode, yeah, me and Taylor did the same story. And it was so funny because it was like a story that like I had never heard of and she had never heard of, so we thought naturally neither one of us were gonna do the same story. That was not the case. You should go back and listen to that episode. It's quite funny.
Uh-huh.
So now each week one of us will text the other and be like, hey, heads up, this is the story I'm doing mine on. And so I'm not only, when you said that you were doing the same story as me just now, was I like, did I fuck up? But I also was like, this bitch has gone off book. She told me she was doing this story, and now she's trying to sabotage me. So I just was having, yeah. You should have got that on film, because that would have been something.
Yeah, I thought I could add a little more entertainment to this entertainment podcast.
she got me. Nothing y'all but zingers.
Y'all are welcome. Y'all are welcome. Anyways.
Oof. But now that my heart rate has returned to normal, I will tell you my sources for this week.
Okay.
So, my sources this week, kept it real simple. I just did Wikipedia and thedailymail.com.
Okay.
So, seeing as you are not actually doing it on the 12 tribes, I'll be telling you a bit of information in case you don't know anything about it.
Okay. I actually don't know anything. Never heard of it.
So,
and that was not
the 12
sarcasm.
Tribes. Well, I don't know anymore because you're a liar. I don't know. I don't know what to believe anymore. Are you even getting married? Is your name even Taylor?
Yes, I promise.
So, the 12 Tribes was founded by Eugene Spriggs, who was a former high school teacher and guidance counselor, and his fourth wife, Marcia, at the height of the Jesus movement in the 70s in Chattanooga, Tennessee. The name of the group reflects the belief that it is creating the 12 ancient tribes of Israel. The group's origins began as a ministry for teenagers, which was called the Light Brigade, The ministry hosted Bible studies and other meetings that attracted runaways and those suffering from addiction out of a small coffee shop called The Lighthouse, since The Light Brigade, in the Spriggs home. The group soon began living communally and opened a restaurant called The Yellow Deli. You ever heard of that?
Mm-mm, but it sounds like that bakery in Raleigh. Was it Yellow Dog?
Yep, not affiliated. But the group decided to join the First Presbyterian Church for a brief time before breaking away from the church. The 12 tribes' beliefs, while resembling those of Christianity, also take beliefs from the Hebrew roots, Judaism, and sacred name movement. However, the group believes that all other denominations are fallen and therefore refuses to align itself with any denomination or movement. The Light Brigade caused controversy from the beginning by bringing in anyone who was willing to join. This included members of different social classes and racial groups, which, as you could imagine, was not accepted back in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Very progressive, might I say.
You know, a lot of cults, I feel like, back in the day, like when you think of Jonestown, they really did usually start out by being like, everybody's welcome. And it was kind of, which is probably a tactic they use because then they can literally just get everybody in on this cult. But yeah, they always seem to start out a little progressive and then you're like, oh, wait, oh no, oh no.
Yeah, it's like they always start out really progressive and you're like, oh, this is so great. And then it's normally, I feel like, someone gets a little power hungry, and then it's all downhill from there.
Yeah.
In 1975, the group broke off from the Presbyterian Church to form the Vine Christian Community Church and began planting churches throughout Georgia, Alabama, and Tennessee, each with their own Yellow Deli. A Yellow Deli is like a Panera Bread.
I was at the Panera Bread today.
Yeah, I wonder if they have chocolate chip bagels. That's my favorite item from the Panera Bread.
I got cinnamon crunch.
Oh, that is also a very good one. Mm-hmm. With a little bit of maybe like honey walnut cream cheese on it. A little bit of plain cream cheese. You know, all cream cheese is good. But they began holding their own services, which they called Critical Mass, appointing elders and baptizing people. This got attention from the parents' community to free our children from the children of God, quite a long title, and the Citizens Freedom Foundation in Tennessee, who labeled the church as a cult and heavily attacked Spriggs as a cult leader. The group attempted to ignore this negative attention and continued to operate its businesses, however, would later move its members to Vermont. Basically got ran out of town. But in 1980, they always do. Maybe they were just misunderstood.
Maybe.
In 1983, charges were brought against Charles Wiseman, who was an elder in the group, for misdemeanor simple assault, which I don't... What is the difference between misdemeanor assault and misdemeanor simple assault? Go, lawyer.
That's a good question.
Sustained.
I don't know. I actually don't know. I feel like we learned, my guess is probably that it changes based on whatever state you're in. I really don't know. Honestly, I'm going to go ahead and say I don't know. I don't want to be out here lawyering without knowledge. So I will admit, I don't know.
Well, I'll allow it.
Okay.
Thank you. But this assault, combined with multiple child custody cases, formed the basis for a search warrant. The Citizens Freedom Foundation had made allegations of child abuse, and on June 22, 1984, Vermont State Police seized 112 children from the community. However, they were all released the same day because the raid was ruled unconstitutional. And 2 months after the raid, the case against Wiseman was dropped after the main witness recanted, saying he was under duress from the anti-cult movement.
That's so weird. That sounds so traumatizing to those children.
Yes, it very much, in this aspect, reminds me of, like, Waco, where the police kind of, like, they're like, okay, you're just being, like, weird. We don't like it. We don't understand you. So we're going to go in guns a-blazing. That's kind of what the vibe I get from this is.
Yeah.
So the group grew substantially during the 1980s and 90s. During this time, they opened branches in Canada, Australia, Brazil, Spain, Germany, Argentina, and the United Kingdom. And changed their name to the 12 Tribes. Through the years, the group has remained controversial with accusations of child labor, custodial interference, and illegal homeschooling. It's also been pointed out that the group's beliefs are a bit unconventional. As the organization grew, they became increasingly reclusive and extremist in their beliefs. So, the group believes that in order for the Messiah to return, the church needs to be restored to its original form, as it is described in Acts 2:38 through 42 and Acts 4:32 through 37. This restoration includes the creation of a new Israel, which should consist of 12 tribes, hence the name, which are located in 12 geographic regions. The group uses the name Yeshua as opposed to Jesus, and believes that after the fall of man, every person is given a conscience, and that after dying, every person goes to a state of being called death, regardless of their faith. Upon the second coming, believers will be brought back for thousands of years to reign with Yeshua before the last judgment. In the end, all of the non-believers will be judged according to their deeds and put into two groups, the righteous and the filthy or unjust. Seems a bit harsh.
Yeah, I don't want to be in the filthy.
To what? Saladies, disgusting. So the filthy and unjust will be sent to the lake of fire.
Yeah.
While the righteous will go on into eternity and fill the universe. Sweet, you know, that kind of, that last part kind of sounded, oh, fill the universe, how philosophical. But you better just hope you are, you ain't filthy, because you, you will be bathed in the lake of fire.
Once I get clean, can I go up to fill the universe?
You know, I don't know. I couldn't say. Better check their website.
Okay.
But the group's goal is to produce an army of 144,000 male virgins who would prepare for Christ's second coming.
Yeah. Now, I've heard of the 144,000, you know, when in, like, predestination, because they say, like, that's the only ones that can go to heaven. But I didn't realize that the 144,000 had to be male virgins.
You know, it only seemed right that they would be virgins. I don't know why they have to specifically be male virgins. How would we know?
I don't know. Word
for it. So, and let's be honest. How are you going to get 144,000 men to admit that they're virgins? I just don't think. They'd be like, are you virgin? Heck no. No, I'm not.
No,
I'm not.
Heck no. No.
Absolutely. I've been hitting it nonstop.
Yeah, they're going to have a rough time with that. Good luck to them. I mean, I don't know, though. If you're promised that you're going to get to go to heaven, I mean, you might as well say it, you know? Because, I mean, I don't want to go to that fiery bath.
That's true. I don't want to go to Fire Lake. But, Now, the group teaches that Jewish people are collectively responsible for the death of Christ, a belief that has caused them to be labeled anti-Semitic. obviously. But the group's members keep with Sabbath and hold bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs for their members. But yeah, they kind of like...
That don't make no sense.
They kind of just like... It seems like they kind of pick and choose different parts of different religions.
But like...
Like, I'm not going to lie. I wonder if they have Christmas and Hanukkah. They're just like all the gifts.
But like, wasn't Jesus himself Jewish?
Correct? He was. He was.
It was the Romans. I don't get it. They clearly ain't read the Bible.
No, they ain't reading the Bible. They must be reading the fan fiction.
Yeah. They reading the stuff that Moses wrote on the down low.
So, according to a 2018 report, the group teaches its followers that the Bible holds that people of color are servants of whites, and that slavery was, quote, a marvelous opportunity for black people.
Now, this is getting rough. This is dark.
Yeah. So, obviously, they're pretty controversial.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Men in the group keep beards and long hair, as this is seen as priestly, while married women keep their hair covered and serve as an outward symbol of her subservience to her man. Members of the group are called tribespeople, and new members are forced to give up all of their belongings and wealth before joining the group, and these belongings are then shared amongst the community equally. Which, that seems... Is that communism? Where everybody gets equal things?
Yeah. But, yeah, like, on a basic level, yeah. But, like, I feel like a lot of cults have this, you know, concept where you go and you have to basically give up all your stuff. And they said they're going to help you. But, obviously, that it don't ever work out that way. Because the leaders usually just take your money. And, like, you know, they'll put a little bit back into it just so y'all can survive or whatever. But, clearly, it's not, like, a big pool of money that everybody gets to use. The leader's taking it.
Well, the group abstains from drugs, alcohol, and premarital sex. Okay. Obviously, they're trying to get those... They're trying to bump up them numbers of virgins.
Yep.
So, before a member can be married, they must enter into a courtship that involves a waiting period in which the man or woman expresses their desire to get to know another person. The couple then receives input from the community while spending time together. If the community approves of the union, then the couple... they'll get engaged, essentially. And at this point, they are permitted to hold hands.
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah.
Weddings are dramatized pre-enactments of what the group believes will happen at the end of time when Yeshua returns to Earth for his bride. Now, I'd like to go to a wedding where it's just a reenactment. It seems a little bit like LARPing to me. And I love a good performance piece.
Yeah, that's so weird. What if you're a bad actor? Does that mean that your wedding, your marriage is not going to be good if your scene doesn't go well?
I don't know. I think you better run that script a few times. I know I would get nervous in front of everybody. Right.
Yeah, I'm not good at, I was never in a play in high school. I tried out for a play one time at church, and I didn't get the part. So, yeah, clearly, I'm not.
I did theater in middle school, and I was so anxious about, like, forgetting my lines. I would just be running those lines and running those lines and running those lines, and I'd have the book with me in hand before I went on stage, and then right before I'd go out, I'd throw it on the floor, and I'd walk out.
Yeah, I was in theater, but I was the choreographer because I was a dancer. But I wasn't actually in the play because I didn't have time to be in the play because, you know, I had other dancing stuff to do. But yeah, me, not a good actress. Not at all.
I hate that for you. I really hate that for you. Now, the group lives communally, as I had mentioned before, and... It's entirely self-sustaining. They grow their own produce, and sometimes They sell these items at farmers markets, but for the most part, they use whatever they grow to sustain themselves. All of the income that the group earns from its various businesses, like the Yellow Deli, go into a common purse. Their shared earnings go to pay for the property taxes, food, electricity, phone, car insurance, clothing, and health care. Which I'm like, dang, y'all got health care? This, I would join.
See, I mean, it sounds good. It sounds good, but then you know they got all this crazy stuff going on.
So, children are homeschooled and teenagers may take on apprenticeships in the group's industries to be taught trades. Children are not sent to college because the group believes that college is not a healthy environment for learning or social development. Which is very interesting because I feel like that's the whole reason most people go to college is self-discovery and, you know, to gain education. So,
yeah. They worry that they're going to learn that their group is a whole bunch of mumbo jumbo and not come back.
This is probably true. Never trust someone who wants to limit your knowledge or limit your access to knowledge.
True. You know, even in, like, the Amish, like, culture, they do the Rumspringa, basically, where the family's like, you know what? When you get however old, you can go out and see what the world's about and see if you like it. And, I mean, because I feel like they're kind of, people would consider them, like, religious extreme, like, type of people. But they're like, go out there, see if you like it. And if not, you can come on back. So.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, a lot of them probably do come back because they're given the freedom to kind of choose what they want to do. Actually, I don't know. Mm. I used to watch Breaking Amish.
I used to watch Breaking Amish. We love TLC shows.
Oh, I do. I really do.
I love them all. I've loved them since I was just a wee girl. And I would watch Four Weddings. And people would be like, yeah, my budget for my wedding is only $100,000. I'd be like, ugh. Gonna be garbage.
Broke. Yeah. Did A Baby Story come on TLC?
I don't know.
Because when I was a little kid, like I'm talking a little kid, I would watch A Baby Story with my grandma, and it was literally just ladies having babies. Like I'd be watching people give birth on the daily. Yeah. It came on TLC. And my mom, when she would find out my grandma was letting me watch women give birth, she would get so mad. But my grandma still let me watch it. I don't know why. It was 13 seasons, came out in 1998. That was the year of my birth.
Yeah, maybe your grandma was trying to teach you that this is what was going to happen. If you didn't live your life right, you was going to have these babies. Mm-hmm. But I do, now that I'm looking at it, I do definitely remember these. And people would tell you, like, the stories of their births and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. I loved the ones where they had the babies in the bathtubs.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Where they'd be like, I was going to sit down and I had my baby on a toilet. And I'm like, oh God.
Yep. But anyways, this little tangent.
Yes. But we love a good trashy TLC show, I ain't gonna lie.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, the group uses corporal punishment with a reed-like rod across a child's bottom. Though many former members say punishments can be far more severe than, you know, what the group will admit to. And the founder, Eugene Spriggs, ensured obedience through fear and brainwashing and exerted control over everything when single men should, like, masturbate and how much toilet paper they should use. Like, that's how controlling he was. It was like to the minute minute, which I just feel like the amount of toilet paper I use, that's up to my prerogative, because sometimes you just be wiping and wiping and you gotta keep wiping. Sometimes it's just a one and done. Sometimes you just need a little bit more.
That's true.
So, maybe if you know what, and it all depends on how much ply How much plot is he providing?
Yeah.
If it's a single, plot, I'ma use the whole role. Like back when I was in public school, and it was just like, it dissolved in your hands.
Oh yeah, when I was in college, you know, when we went to NC State, I mean, everywhere I used the bathroom was the crappiest toilet paper ever. It's just like your whole butt be just hurting for 4 years solid. Because of that toilet paper. I did know people who would bring their own toilet paper. I had a friend. He brought his own toilet paper, but I just couldn't commit. You know, I was in college, didn't have enough money. And there was free toilet paper there, so I wasn't going to buy my own.
No. No. Yeah, I can't be doing all that and barely afford the alcohol in college. So. We already know what I was going to spend the money on. But on March 3rd, 2020, police in New South Wales, Australia, in a search was conducted at Peppercorn Creek Farms property for stillborn babies buried there. So it was reported that at least one infant body was found at the farm, and as of October 2021, no criminal charges have been announced. But that's, I mean,
like something's got to come out of that, right?
I would certainly hope so. Now, in July 2019, the FBI released a 40-page summary after allegations of child abuse at the group's Hiddenite NC property. So right here in North Kakalaki, baby. The documents revealed the existence of other investigations over the years to include suspicions of child abuse in other compounds. There were also more bizarre allegations, including deaths that were thought to be suspicious, allegations of oddities during spiritual rituals, as well as unsubstantiated allegations involving the group's founder's conduct during his time in the military. Now, more recently, as in this past like week or so, Colorado officials have been investigating a massive wildfire that destroyed 1,000 homes in the suburb of Boulder. Did you see it, hear about that? Probably not.
No.
And this is what inspired me to do this story. Okay. I saw it on TikTok. But officials believe the fire was most likely started at a property owned by the 12 tribes because a viral video was taken by a passerby on the morning of the fire that shows a shed set ablaze on the organization's 4.3-acre compound. However, as of right now, Colorado authorities have not charged anyone in the cult with connection to the fire.
That's so weird.
But that is the story of the 12 tribes, and like I feel like this is kind of open to interpretation. I think they're a cult. You may not,
yeah,
but I they definitely got culty vibes for sure. I mean, they haven't done anything like Jonestown or anything crazy.
Well, there's like certain things that I've definitely listened to on other podcasts. I actually listened to Wine and Crime. I just started listening to them. They did a cult podcast. And there's like certain things that like you have to like, you kind of meet to like be a cult. And a lot of it is like isolating, obviously. A big one is isolating your members, which clearly they're doing. And then also, you know, when they take your money financially and all that, and there's, so I would say that they are, and even if they're not a cult, obviously a lot of their beliefs are horrendous. I mean, and it's weird because like their whole like communal living, like everybody comes here, but yet they're like, but we don't like Jewish people or, you know, black people. And it's like, well, what it don't make sense. I'm looking at the 12 tribes in Hiddenite, North Carolina, because I was like, where is that? And I actually had a cousin who used to live very close to this area, so I'm going to ask her if she's ever heard of them or seen them, because in the house that they like live in or whatever, that it looks like, it's like a, it don't look like what you would think a, it would be a, like a commune. It's like a big, almost like a colonial looking house. Weird.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I had first heard about it because our friend, Polly, lives not too far from there, and she has been to the Yellow Deli.
Oh.
Now, that being said, she does say they do make good sandwiches, so.
Dang. You know about
But, like,
my...
the people who work there are members of this group. And if you look at pictures of how they dress, they kind of dress like the Duggar family. Like, long skirts, you know.
Look, sometimes these places, they make looking. A good, they make good food. You know the story of the group in my community. They got a restaurant or two, and they good. They used to have these chocolate crinkle cookies. God dang. Delicious.
Yeah. I don't know what they're putting in those, the cults be putting in their baked goods, but evidently they're good. Well, if you want to support any of the businesses of this cult, they have a lot, as listed on their Wikipedia page. They have Parchment Press, which is a printing company. They have a construction company. They have a couple of construction companies, actually. They have Greener Formulas, which is a soap and body care company. And then they also have Common Sense Farm, which is the manufacturer for the soap and body care. And then they have Simon the Tanner, which is a chain of shoe stores and outfitters in New Hampshire and Vermont. They also have a company that runs two cafes in Colorado and Georgia. They have organic food distribution in Spain. They, of course, have several Yellow Delis, one located just right here in North Carolina. And then they have Common Grounds Cafe as well. They also have Blue Blinds Bakery and the Mate Factor Cafe. So
wild. Surprised I never heard of them.
I feel like that's so, you really don't be thinking that cults are as close to you as they are. Mm. We're like 1 degree away from cults.
Yeah. I tell y'all, they are closer than you think. And that's all I'll say on it. But yeah, honestly,
if you're listening to this podcast, you are a member of a cult right now. That cult is called, this is going to sound weird.
Dun dun. Yeah, it's so weird. And honestly, some like religious groups like this that, you know, we may consider a cult, I feel like if they just switched it up just a little bit, you know, took away some of the stuff, like, they wouldn't be a cult. They may just be a little bit of a more fringe religious group, but they wouldn't have all the negative connotation. And honestly, they might could do something good if they just didn't get, I feel like it's a power trip. If they didn't get the power trip, something good could come out of it, but oh well. Now, thank you for that story. I'd never heard of them, and I'm actually really interested, so I'm probably going to do a lot of research and avoid other responsibilities tonight.
You know what? Maybe we'll take a trip to the Yellow Deli and we'll put it on Instagram. Confirm whether or not they got good sandwiches.
Yeah, we'll do a rating. Okay, are we ready for my story?
Yes, are you just going to retell me the story of the 12 tribes?
I am. You know what? I let you tell that whole story and still turns out that was the story I was going to do.
So, we'll see. We'll let you, we'll do a poll at the end of the episode. Who did it best?
Yeah. No. I am doing my story on Gwen Shamblin Lara and about her, oddly culty behavior. So, my sources, waydown.com, webmd.com, The Way Down Diet, article by Lisa Fields, bustle.com, article by Justice Namaste, newschannel5.com, an article by Phil Williams, wikipedia.com, oxygen.com, What is the Remnant Fellowship, The Church featured in HBO's The Way Down by Jill Setterstrom, esquire.com, an article by Lauren Kronk, Behind the Scenes, A Remnant Fellowship Wedding, Life with Gwen and Joe, and The Way Down, which is a documentary on HBO, which re-sparked my interest in this case, which also our friend Polly told me to watch this a few weeks ago, so, you know, she's really up on her cult information.
Thank you for supporting the podcast by giving us inspiration, Polly. Thank you.
Yes. So, Gwen Shamblin Laura was born in Memphis, Tennessee in 1955, and she was raised in a Church of Christ family, and she was fairly religious growing up. And when she went to college, she went to University of Tennessee in Knoxville, and here she earned an undergraduate degree in dietetics and a master's degree in food and nutrition with an emphasis on biochemistry. So, following her graduation from college, she was a registered dietitian, and she was a consultant and a faculty member at Memphis State University for about 5 years. She also worked at the Tennessee Department of Health for about 5 years. So clearly, like, health and nutrition were very important to her. She was working with, like, universities and working in the Department of Health. You know, it seems like she was pretty good at it. She liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1978, she married a man named David Shamblin, and the two ended up having two children together named Elizabeth and Michael. And soon after Gwen married David, she decided to start a weight control counseling practice. And she started this in 1980. And this was inspired by her personal experiences. She said she had struggled with her weight in college. I mean, which one of us hasn't?
Not me.
Not me.
Not me. We definitely had very healthy eating habits. And drank and ate within moderation. So
yeah. Honestly, don't fact check us.
Not fat check us. Don't do that either.
Honestly, my freshman year of college, I didn't gain any weight. I actually lost weight because my roommate was hella into going to the gym, and I went with her because I felt, you know, like weird. But our sophomore year, or your junior year, or whatever, when we moved into our sorority house, all bets were off.
You would think, oh, you're in a sorority, you probably wouldn't gain any weight. Hell absolutely no. Not. The food was too good. When I tell you, the food is one of the best parts of being in a sorority. I mean, the shit was just bussing. And yeah. Unlimited. Oh, my God.
Mm. Yeah, and the food was close. It should
make whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. The food was close and the gym was far. So, I mean, come on now. Or maybe we got lucky and we had a good chef. You know, I don't know. Other sororities, if y'all had bad sorority chefs, I do apologize. But you probably didn't gain as much weight as us, so that's something. But also, you didn't get the bomb-ass food we got.
Oh, my God. It was so good. Emily, if you're listening to this, dream about some of your food. She had made this good spaghetti. When I graduated, I asked for a couple recipes because I was like, I need it.
The bang bang shrimp, the butter chicken, and the mater soup. I didn't even like mater soup before I ate her mater soup. So,
yeah. I make her tomato soup a couple times a winter. It's just so good. It's so simple, too. But
mm-hmm. Anyway, this ain't a podcast about mater soup.
I wish it was. I could go into heavy detail.
So, back to Gwen. So, she was counseling people, on weight control. But oddly enough, her counseling, she would tell people that things such as genetics, metabolism, and behavior modification actually does not explain why some people are fat and others are skinny. So basically, she argues that the science behind weight loss and weight control doesn't actually matter. So, you know, like if your genetics, like if your family's predisposed to being more overweight, she was like, doesn't matter. It just don't matter. Which is odd to me that this thought kind of entered her brain because she studied nutrition so heavily in college, and I'm sure that that's what they learned. But her consulting business took off, and in about 1986, she founded the Way Down Workshop. And this is a weight loss program where the participants would have no food restrictions, no exercise requirements, no weigh-ins, and no calorie counting. Which honestly sounds really good to a person who's wanting to lose weight. Because when you're thinking about, you know, losing weight, you're like, well, I don't want to do all this stuff. I want to eat what I want, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, you don't have to do any of that. It's none of the difficult part. And so she actually started this workshop while she was getting her master's degree. So she was going all for it. And she hosted her first event for the Weigh Down Workshop in a mall in Memphis, Tennessee. And then she continued to host these classes in various other locations. But in the 1990s, she started to host these workshops at Bellevue Baptist Church near Memphis. And at this time is really when the program took on its like religious aspect, which is weird because what does weight loss have to do with religion? But you may be wondering, like, what is the Weigh Down Diet? Like, how do I do it? Well, for those that wanted to participate, the workshop itself consisted of a 12-week seminar, and it was guided by video and audio tapes featuring Gwen, and I'm sure, you know, you got to take these for a pretty penny. So basically, the way that you lose weight during this is that you listen to your body, notice when you're full, and then you just stop eating, which, like, at first glance, it kind of just seems like intuitive eating, which, like, is good, but that's not really what she meant. So, according to her, you shouldn't eat until you feel truly hungry. So, she recommends that when you start this little diet, you wait till you're real hungry and your stomach's actually grumbling. And so, once you feel your stomach grumble with the hunger pains, then you know you can eat. And so, basically, the website for the Weigh Down Diet says this, quote, the concept is simple. Eat when you are hungry and stop when you are full. You know? I just, based on personal experience, that's harder than you would think.
It is harder than you think. Also, because for me personally, I am on such a schedule. I feel like I've been on a schedule of eating my whole life, you know, because like in high school and middle school and elementary school, you have a certain time that you eat. And then in college, I had a certain time that I ate. And now, even if I'm not hungry, I'm like, shit, it's 12. I gotta go. I gotta go eat lunch.
Oh, yeah, I base my whole day around when I'm going to eat a meal and what I'm going to eat. Now, I will say I do have a terrible relationship with food. And, you know, I will work out on that one day, but right now I haven't. But, yeah, I don't eat when I'm hungry. I eat because I know I got to eat at this time, this time, this time, and I get bored. Anyways, that's enough about me. But, you know, basically Gwen would say, you know, if you're feeling like you want to eat, if you say it's 12 o'clock and it's time to eat, but you're not hungry, instead of eating, go grab your Bible and pray. And you're going to pray until you ain't hungry no more or you ain't thinking about food no more. She says that the love that you have for food can easily be transferred into a love of God. And it's just that simple. She told her participants to stop bowing down to the refrigerator and bow back down to God.
Listen, I will bow down to the refrigerator. Sometimes I just open a refrigerator because I'm bored. Also, I cannot stand a room temperature. I can't stand a room temperature beverage. So,
no.
Mind your business.
People who drink room temperature water, I don't get it. I don't get it. And you know, they're like, you're not a real water drinker if you don't drink at room temperature. That's not true. I drink hella water. But room temperature water is nasty. It tastes like... it just tastes like whatever it's sitting in. Nasty. But, you know, the Weigh Down program, oddly, it gained popularity in the early 90s. And by 1994, the program was being offered in about 600 churches in the U.S. And they even started offering it in Europe. And then by 1995, the program grew even more. And it started being offered in over 1,000 churches spanning across 49 states in America. And it was also offered in Great Britain and Canada. And within just another year, the program was being offered to about 5,000 churches. So this program was growing quickly. And, you know, in the early 90s, obviously, like, being skinny was, like, that's what you had to do. Because if you think about, like, I mean, obviously, still, people are convinced that being skinny, it makes you prettier. But in the 90s, I feel like in early 2000s is when the models were, like, a full-on skinny rail, and so she was trying to push that, and I know a lot of people were like, that's what they wanted to look like, and these weight loss programs were just all the rage. Even when I was a little kid, I remember, like, my mom just doing the random, like, Weight Watchers. We would go to some some, it was a lot of like women's places. Instead of women's going to empower each other, which is kind of the vibe they were going for, it was like, mm-hmm. come all lose a bunch of weight so you can look better together. And I remember going, yes.
Oh my God.
It's just, ugh.
I feel like if you were alive and a small impressionable girl in, you know, the early 2000s, then you definitely remember Weight Watchers. Mm-hmm. You remember Curves.
Yes, that's Craig. What we went. Curves. Yep.
Your mom, 100%, when she wanted to go on her diet, she bought a bunch of 100-calorie packs, and you had to eat them fucking 100-calorie packs.
Yes. If it's under 100 calories, fucking, you can eat it.
And freaking Crystal Light. We ain't drinking nothing but fucking Crystal Light in this house. I hate Crystal Light.
Oh my gosh. And my cousin used to drink Slim Fast. And my cousin's my age, so like, you know, when she was a little kid, like I'm talking like 3 or 4, she'd be down in Slim Fast, and that's what, like, you know, those moms would drink to lose weight. She
you just know thought what? It was I like cannot.
Chocolate milk.
I can't say much because I myself also would drink some of them Slim Fast shakes because they did. They tasted so good. I ain't gonna lie. I was like, oh, it's like a Yoo-Hoo or something.
Honestly, I just stuck with the Yoo-Hoo because the Slim Fast, I could tell it's fake sugar. I could tell it had an aftertaste. Anyway, so obviously, based on what we just described, the 90s, early 2000s, Gwen's program was very successful, and she was appearing on numerous, you know, TV shows, including the Larry King Live and The View, and so she was getting a lot of press. And by 1996, the Way Down Workshop had about 40 staff members, and a headquarters was built for the company in Franklin, Tennessee. And then Gwen started to host these big annual summer conventions for the workshops in Desert Oasis, which is near Nashville. Then in 1997, she published a book titled The Way Down Diet, and more than 1.2 million copies were sold. And the book sent the same message of the weight loss program that she'd already had, which was use God to avoid overeating. So clearly by this point, the workshop was successful and it was profitable, very profitable. But investigations were starting to be done into how the leaders of the workshop were spending this money that they were making. And so Gwen mm-hmm. said that half the money went to the government for taxes and the other half went back into the workshop itself so that other people could be helped. But a few years after this statement, there were still some questions. And so News Channel 5 in Nashville asked her, quote, "So half and half leaves nothing for Gwen Chamblin. That's not completely true, is it?" And she replied, "Yes, it's completely true." So basically they were saying, okay, if you're giving half to the government and half goes directly back into the program, then you're not making a profit, and that don't seem to make sense. And she's like, "No, that's mm-hmm. exactly what I'm doing because I'm so great." And we're all like, "Ma'am, mm. we know that's a lie. Also, God, no business so does much. That. Like, you got to give a little bit to yourself." And even if she was like, "Yeah, I give some to myself," people would have been like, "Okay, yeah, that makes sense." I mean, come on, ma'am.
Yeah. Well, also, even if it's a non-profit, you still got to pay your employees and pay, you know, whoever's yeah. running the bitch.
You're still making money.
I remember, so my sister, when I, there's a fairly, you know, a decent age gap between me and my sister. And when she was going to college and she was trying to decide what she wanted to, like, do after college, she was like, "Yeah, I want to work for a non-profit." And I was, you know, I was pretty young. And I asked her, I said, "So you ain't gonna get paid?" And she was like, "That's not correct. You get paid with a nonprofit." And I was like, "Ooh, now you know."
Ooh, honestly, it is confusing. I still don't understand how they work, but, you know, it is what it is. But anyways, so a little bit before these investigations started in 2001, Gwen actually started another little business venture, and this is when she founded Remnant Fellowship Church in 1999. So the actual church, the building itself, was completed in 2004, and it was on 40 acres of land that Gwen had purchased in Brentwood, Tennessee. And Brentwood, Tennessee is an extremely affluent area. On the documentary, they really give, like, describe the area, like, just rich, rich, rich people. And so this is where she decided she was going to plop down her little church. And if you see the church, like, it looks wild. Like, it's fancy, fancy. And she essentially started this church because she thought the message that she was preaching through her weight loss workshop was the answer to all the world's evils. She basically thought that the only way to be a real Christian was to follow her and her teachings. And so she was like, you know what? I need a church. This is going to be easier for me to get this message out here. And, you know, like I said before, so Gwen was raised in a Church of Christ family, but her teachings at Remnant strayed, and Church of Christ is, like, pretty conservative Christian, but her teachings were straying pretty far from a typical conservative Christian message because she denied the existence of the Holy Trinity, which is the God in three forms, which is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. She placed sole importance on God, and she believed that this was the right way to practice Christianity, and her teachings were the only true way. Which, that was pretty big. Like, apparently she didn't start out denying the Trinity, and once she did, people were like, whoa, I didn't sign up for this. Because, you know, if you are a Baptist or, I don't know, Southern Christianity, I feel like, obviously, the Holy Trinity, mm-hmm. like, that is it. And so when she said, nope, I don't believe in that, a lot of people were like, And if you're not, like, a Christian, or if you're not, like, a Southern Christian, or if your church doesn't believe in that, and you're listening to this, you're probably like, that doesn't seem like a big deal. Like, it doesn't seem like a radical thing if you don't really know the nuances, but trust me, it is.
Oh, absolutely. We all care about the... I remember, like, they would be... like big banners about the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, and especially like, and I don't know if this is the way it is with all denominations, but growing up Baptist, they would talk about like the Holy Spirit as being its own like entity, but like mm-hmm. in itself, it's kind of complicated because Jesus, God, and the Holy Ghost is all like separate, but then they're all God together, but they it's really crazy. Emphasize that.
Also, I feel like in like my church and all the churches like kind of around where I'm from, like Jesus is the main character, which is weird. Mm-hmm. But Jesus is the main character.
He doesn't come into season 2, but yeah. He really steals the show.
So, it's weird that I think she chose God as the main character because she wanted to be God, and obviously God is like the highest kind of, I don't know. It's a lot of nuance, but, you know, oddly enough, the new church focused on weight loss still. Like, when people give up and give testimony in church, usually they give it on how my life changed when I found Christ. You know, I used to be on crack cocaine, and now I'm not no more. These people, they would get up and tell their testimonies, and it was literally like, I used to be 200 pounds, now I weigh 150. And it's all thanks to God and Gwen Shamblin. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, no fatties.
Honestly. And so in the HBO docuseries, a former member named Teresi, I think is maybe how you say it, she said that if you were a member of the church and you didn't lose at least 2 pounds per week, then you'll be told to fast. And some would even have to fast for as long as 40 days. This lady was told that she needed to just quit eating to lose more weight. She said that she had lost 130 pounds within 18 months, but they wanted her to fast and lose even more weight because the faster you can lose the weight, the holier you are. And let me go ahead and say, if y'all don't know what Gwen Shamblin looks like, go ahead and pause and go take a look. Now, this woman started out with normal-looking hair back in, like, the 80s. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a bit poofy for 80s. The woman's hair got bigger as her body got smaller. Like, in some of the videos I saw of her from, like, 2020, she looked like a old sunken-in skeleton with a massive ball of hair on her head. And yes, that's exactly what she looks like. She just looks unhealthy.
And I'm confident that her hair is fake because if you know anything about anything, you know that if you lose too much weight, especially too quickly, you will lose hair because your body isn't getting those necessary nutrients. So I'm confident that this is a wig. And perhaps, you know, she's thinking, okay, the skinnier I am, the more holy I am. I know it's the higher the hair, the closer to God. So she has got to be the most holy, God-fearing woman. Good for her.
Yeah. You know, but unfortunately, she's not too holy, or she's not a great person, because oftentimes she would compare the program and what she wanted her followers to do to what the Jewish people suffered during the Holocaust. So she literally would be like, you know, when people were in prison camps, they ate less food and they lost a lot of weight. So we should just live like those people and then we can lose weight. And she said this during a deposition that was being taken. And I guess the lawyer that was taking the deposition, he was like, are you seriously comparing this to the Holocaust? And he was basically like, obviously, this is horrible and offensive. And then she goes, well, yeah, this is what I've been telling people for 15 years and it works. So, and I was like, oh my gosh, she literally thinks that she's modeling this off of prison camps. So not only were these insane dieting tactics being used to basically abuse the members of Remnant Church, the members were encouraged to abuse their children, and Gwen highly encouraged this. And this seems like a theme in these cults as well. So she was known to tell church members that they should hit their children with glue sticks, wooden spoons, and other items to teach them to obey. Now, the glue sticks, that came into play a lot.
That's very specific.
It is. But, and I'm not quite sure why. They explained somewhere why they would use glue sticks. It was on the glue documentary. Glue
sticks are low in calories.
Yeah, I really don't know. But they were, she taught use glue sticks. And when I say glue sticks, I don't mean like an Elmer's glue stick. I'm talking more like a, I think it's more like a hot glue stick, you know? Yeah, so like that. Kind of like a switch, but a glue stick. And if you don't know what a switch is a stick that you go out in the yard and then that's what you get whipped with. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I never got a switch. Brandon got a switch to him one time. He had to go out and pick his own switch. And he kept picking dead sticks. Because, you know, if you get hit with a dead stick, it'll just break. And so he had to go out and pick as many switches as he could until he found a live one that he could actually get whipped with.
Yeah, I never had to do that, but I've heard, I feel like it's like an older Southern thing. I would hope that nobody does this now, but like I've heard of like my grandparents or like people like that having to go out and you had to go pick your own switch, and then that's what you get beat with.
Which, I tell y'all, this is related but not related, but I know that people think that, like, people of my generation are, they grew up a lot different, but if you grew up in a small town and you're my age, not many things changed. When I was in elementary school, my first elementary school, the principal was able to spank children with a paddle. I watched a child get paddled at my elementary school in the front office. And my teacher had a paddle with holes in it. And she said that this was kindergarten. My kindergarten teacher had a paddle with holes. She said the holes made it hurt more and made it, I guess, more aerodynamic so she could really get up in there.
God.
Yeah. And for reference, I'm in my early 20s and that stuff was still going on. So, yeah. You never know what's going on out there, people. Anyways. So, Gwen would tell children that, quote, the way you show God you are answering to him is through obeying your mother and father on the first time. If you obey on the second or third time, you are being your own God. And no one playing around like that can ever go to heaven. So you will only live a few years on earth and you will have a horrible afterlife. If you don't obey mommy and daddy on the first try, you'll be taken out and you'll be very, very sorry.
Does she throw them in the lake of fire?
I mean, I don't think she does it personally, but basically she says, yeah, that's where they're going. So, you know,
well, if that, listen, if that is the criteria that you don't, your parents tell you to stop doing something and you don't do it, stop doing it immediately, I'll be the first in line, because as a child, I could not be calmed down. I was hyper, and I thought I was all that in a bag of peanuts. I still am all that in a bag of peanuts. But yeah, if that was the criteria, well.
Well, unfortunately, now this part gets really sad. So, unfortunately, one couple seems to have taken the teachings of Gwen and her views on disciplining, quote, disciplining, her children to the extreme. When their discipline, which really abuse, led to the death of their 8-year-old son, Joseph Smith. So, Joseph and Sonia Smith were two members of the Remnant Fellowship, and they had an 8-year-old son who was also named Joseph. And they routinely disciplined him in the ways that Gwen approved. And so, the Smiths would discipline their son by beating him with glue sticks, belt, heated coat hangers, and they would lock him in confined spaces, and they would even tie him up with rope. So, Sonia Smith reported to the police that they would normally give their children whippings in increments of 10. And on that, the day of Joseph's death, he had gotten several whipping sessions. And in the documentary, they showed this little boy, and he seemed so sweet. And, like, the people who, like, worked at the daycare at the church, like, some people who weren't, like, members of the church would kind of work at their little daycare. And they said that he would come in there, and he seemed, like, scared of his dad. And it kind of just seems like he was a little rambunctious kid. I mean, he was 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the police also learned, after the Smiths were arrested, that they would often lock Joseph in his room and force him to pray to a picture of Jesus on the ceiling. And they would even put him in a closet to do the same for days and even weeks. And during these sessions, he would only be giving a bucket for a toilet. And sometimes the older siblings would even, now I assume that the older siblings will be forced to hold him down because they may be older, but they're probably still minors. They'll be forced to hold Joseph down as his parents, quote, disciplined him. So on October 8th, 2003, is the day that Joseph was killed. And on this day, he had been disciplined and they locked him in a trunk for several hours, and he died while being locked in the trunk. And so, yeah, the county medical examiners concluded that Joseph had died as a result of acute and chronic abuse. And members of Remnant Fellowship, including Gwen, paid for the Smiths' defense in their trial. Which, like, what the heck? And it wasn't like they were denying it. I mean, they told the police that they would discipline their children in these ways.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't matter because the Smiths were both convicted and were sentenced to life plus 30 years in prison in 2017. And while the church was implicated in this, there were no charges ever filed. However, the punishment that was inflicted on Joseph by his parents was directly in line with what Gwen had taught at the church. And in the documentary, they said that the mom had spoken with Gwen about what discipline they should be giving to their son. And so clearly, I mean, they're clearly shitty people, but the church just, you know, gave them the ammunition they needed to really just ramp this up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I guess this is the only case of a child actually dying, I think. But can you imagine what was happening to, like, all the other children as well? Terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So, clearly, at this point, things in the church were getting much worse. And, you know, just like a typical cult leader, Gwen was also a big old hypocrite. And this really came to light when she went against one of her seemingly most important teachings, which was that divorce is absolutely not allowed. Because in 2018, Gwen went against this teaching when she suddenly divorced her husband of 40 years and married a man named Joe Lara. And this really angered a lot of women in the church because for so long, a lot of the women were told that they could not divorce their husbands, even when their husbands were repeatedly cheating on them. Now, Joe Lara. He was an interesting character. He was a mostly out-of-work actor who was from San Diego. He was most known for his role in Tarzan in the made-for-TV movie Tarzan in Manhattan. Following this, being in this little movie, he moved to Nashville, though, and he worked as a handyman, but his real dream in life was to be a country music star. And this is where he initially learned about Remnant Fellowship, and he met Gwen. So Joe had apparently grew up with a wealthy stepfather, and he basically would go for women that had the wealth to support the lifestyle that he wanted. So clearly Joe was drawn to Gwen because she was rich, and if he married her, he would have access to her money and her influence, and the church even had its own recording studio, so he was going to be able to pursue his dreams as a country music star. So it was all working out for him. But, you know, don't feel bad for Gwen, is if you thought you were going to feel bad that she was being used, because it's suspected that she married Joe for publicity because she could finally have a husband who she could, show off in public and have the support of for the public. Because to me, so her husband, her first husband, he wasn't really like a public figure in the church, but he was always kind of working behind the scenes. And the odd thing is her husband was overweight, which clearly was not okay in this church. And so honestly, she was probably embarrassed of him and was like, yeah. So when a hot new thing came along, she was like, all right, yep, this is what we're going with. Now.
Yeah, I'm looking at him, and he looks like a poor man's David Hasselhoff.
Yeah, he really did.
Picture of him.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he's had a great amount of Botox. He looks shocked. I'm shocked as well.
Yeah. And now, Gwen and Joe, they have a YouTube channel called Life with Gwen and Joe. And so I watched a video on this channel, and I watched one video, which was the behind the scenes of a wedding, because they host these massive, elaborate weddings, like lavish, crazy. The whole church gets involved, and they host it on Gwen's estate, because she lives in this, like, massive, rich, rich home. And, during the video, they're walking around, and they go to the table, the cake table, and the lady who's at the cake table, Gwen is like, hey, you have a testimony you can share. And like I said, for me, like I said earlier, a testimony is usually I was on drugs and then I found Jesus. No. She was like, Gwen was like, so you lost a lot of weight, right? And she was like, yeah, I did. And before I lost the weight, my relationship with my husband was going down the toilet and blah, blah, blah. And then she was like, and now I'm skinny, basically. And then Gwen was like, and you know, that's hard to do when you work around all this cake. And I'm like, what the heck? So she stopped this woman just to be like, hey, tell everybody about how much weight you lost and how much better your life is. All right, bye. So weird. And that video was filmed in 2020. So now we're on to May 29th, 2021. So Gwen's son-in-law, Brandon Hannah, and four other church members, they all board a 1982 Cessna Citation 501 private jet, and they were heading to Palm Beach, Florida. Now, Joe was flying this plane. Apparently, I mean, he was somewhat experienced in flying, but I don't think he was, like, great at flying. And so on this day, the weather was overcast with a visibility of 10 miles. And honestly, I don't know if that's good or bad, but that's what I read. But not long after the plane took off on this day, the plane crashed into Percy Priest Lake near Smyrna, Tennessee, and all the passengers on board died in the accident. So Gwen Shamblin and Joe Lara died, as well as all the other passengers. Now, it was interesting because following Gwen's death, it was shocking to find out that absolutely none of her million-dollar estate or assets were left to Remnant Fellowship, which just goes to show that she clearly did not care about her organization. She just wanted money, and she only cared about herself and about you being as skinny as you can be. And that is Gwen Shamblin.
Where did the money go? She, like, leave it to someone?
I don't know. I assume what I saw, because those articles were fairly recent, and so maybe she left it to her daughter. But yeah, I'd like to know. There was a lot of details in those articles, and it gave me PTSD from my wills and trusts and estates exam. So I didn't go too far into it, but I do know that people were very shocked that she didn't leave any money to the church, which, you know, is shocking considering that was like her whole, you, if you're a religious leader, you're supposed to want, you know, your followers or your congregation to like be bettered by your death or be bettered even when you die. But clearly that's not what she was about. I mean, obviously.
No, Gwen said, you know what? Never mind. And we've talked about this a couple times in this podcast, and I still maintain, I don't care how rich I am flying commercial. You won't catch me on a little plane.
Yeah, and you know what I've kind of, so I when I first heard this about her, it was actually the Sinisterhood podcast, and one of the gals, Heather, on that podcast, she actually like knows how to fly planes, and she said a lot of times the reason that small planes go down is because it's typically the people like flying them just don't have the experience that a commercial like aircraft would have. And also, like, if there's weight distribution and you slightly alter the weight distribution, then that could really mess everything up too. So basically, you just, if you're going to fly small, make sure you have a very, very experienced pilot, which most commercial pilots are that. So,
yeah, I'm looking for somebody with a hefty resume. And, you know, I want all them fat tourists on the damn plane. I know that Gwen had all them skinny people on the plane. That's why the weight of the plane was probably off. No, I need everybody on the plane with their luggage and everything. I want that joker weighted.
Yeah.
Because I ain't going down via plane. I will
and
not.
Honestly, this is not related to the plane, but I was thinking about Gwen. And I just feel like, you know, I've never seen her medical records. This is pure speculation. But I feel like she couldn't have been healthy. Like, I feel like she had to have had some medical issues. Because when you look at her, she looks sick. Like, she just does not look healthy. Which I'm sure she isn't from years and years of this terrible, what she calls, dieting. I just really wonder what was going on, like, with her. And it's, I mean, it's not going to come out because, I mean, the Remnant Fellowship is still, like, active, I'm pretty sure. And I think her daughter basically took over. And maybe her son, I'm not sure. So, it's interesting. I wonder how it'll go from here.
I don't know. I mean, they don't have any money. And I don't know how they're going to raise it. I don't know how they're going to raise the money because they can't do anything like a bake sale. So,
no, that's true. Which is funny because at the wedding that they hosted, there was a lot of food. I'm talking a lot of food. And not healthy food, like good-ass looking food. So I don't really know. Unless you were just supposed to not eat for a few days before you got there.
Yeah, you've been fasting for 40 days.
God, I'm so hungry. Anyways. What's our theme for next week?
Thank you for that. Our theme, I'll tell you. Our theme, we're going to go with don't trust the government. I already don't. But I'm going to tell you why next week.
Yeah, so will I. For a different reason than Sydney.
Or maybe the same.
Maybe.
Only time will tell.
Yeah. If you're gonna miss us before now and then, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. It's pretty easy to find us. Gonna Sound Weird podcast. Just look at This Gonna Sound Weird. You'll find us. Send us a Gmail if you like at thisisgonnasoundweird@gmail.com. Is there anything else?
No, I think that's it. All I want to say is stay weird. Goodbye.
Goodbye.